Then we'll work out all the Higgs couplings of the quarks and leptons. And then we'll talk about a little example muon decay, because everybody's got to know the formula for the muon decay rate. It's like the, you know, one of the most famous formulas in particle physics, so you're going to know it. I figure, yeah?
I haven't done anything yet. So why does the so in yesterday's lecture we have Lagrangian mass, which is U R bar and R and U U F. So why is this?
Why does
the mass term look like this rather than like U R bar and U U R?
U R bar and U U R is zero. So let me show you that if you've never.
Thank you.
So remember what UR means. It means a half 1 plus gamma 5 UR. So UR bar, UR is equal to a half 1 plus gamma 5 UR, all barred UR. And then using the gamma matrix stuff, which I'm assuming you know, so I mean this becomes UR bar, and then you get so this matrix on the other side barred, which is actually a half 1 minus gamma 5. Well, you get U bar, sorry, I'm taking out the gamma 5s. And this UR is a half 1 plus gamma 5 U, and these are orthogonal projectors, so you get 0. So for fermions, a mass term of this type is U bar R, U left, plus the Hermitian conjugate, which is U bar left, U right. And then when you add them together, the gamma 5s go away and you just get U bar U.
So do you mean that there are 4 terms but only 2 terms?
Pardon? Well, what I mean is this other possible invariant is 0. But you might have naively thought this would, you know, it looks Lorentz invariant, it looks okay, but when you work it out, it's actually 0. Okay? Okay. So let me collect some of the results from last time, and then we'll move forward, which is always better than moving backwards. Okay, so we went to the mass eigenstate. Let me erase this, because I'm going to use this board. So I'm not going to be around this afternoon for questions. On Fridays, at least not the last Friday, but this Friday and the second Friday, I go into Toronto. I leave early afternoon to head into Toronto. But you can ask me Monday. Apart from that, I more or less live in my office. Okay, so we had these transformations U that took you to the mass eigenstate basis. So for example, I'll go over this example. In the doublet are U left, D left, and they have separate unitary transformations that we labeled like this. And when I put the prime on them, they're the mass eigenstate fields. And so we wrote this, for example, in terms of the mass eigenstate fields. So I'm just collecting results now from the last couple of lectures, because we're going to use them. And so there's just another unitary matrix here, which is U dagger U D left, and we called that the Kibibo-Kobayashi-Maskawa matrix. We called it that because, so what is it? U left dagger to cancel this factor out. This multiplies both of them, and then so it's a combination of the unitary transformations that diagonalize the that rotate the left-handed up and down quark fields to diagonalize their mass matrices. And then we had, for the W bosons, the ones with definite charge, charge plus or minus, the fields, were linear combinations of W1 and W2. And we had, for the neutral gauge bosons, the mass of Z was given by this formula, a linear combination of W3 and the hypercharge gauge boson B. The photo. Oh, do I hear something? Am I? Yes?
Isn't there an I in that first formula?
Isn't there an I in that first formula? Pen.
I could be wrong.
Nope. You're not wrong. My notes are wrong. I blindly copied them. A risky thing to do. Ah, could fall off the cliff here. Okay, thank you. So the orthogonal combination was a massless particle that will be the photon. And we derived the masses of the particles. Let me write that down. We got a lot of formulas. And the Higgs doublet, which we put in, after we remove by gauge transformations the would-be Goldstone bosons, the particles that looked like they were massless Goldstone bosons, but they ended up getting absorbed into some of the polarization components of the massive W and Z, then H could be just written like this, where this is the Higgs boson, a scalar spin zero field that destroys a spin zero particle that we call the Higgs boson. Yes?
Ah,
so if you spontaneously break, you didn't do that in field theory. Huh? If you spontaneously break a global symmetry, that means there's generators that don't leave the vacuum invariant. They transform it someplace. And those generators, if you think of a field, the field for the vacuum configuration V, since the potential is invariant under that symmetry, those generators take you along a direction that costs you no potential energy, and that means it's a massless particle. A mass term is something quadratic in the scalar field, m squared phi squared, so exciting phi from zero, for example, would cost you potential energy. So if you have a direction of excitation that costs no potential energy, there'll be a massless scalar associated with it, and that's called a Goldstone boson. And that's because Jeffrey Goldstone first worked this out in generality. See, it's not so hard to get famous, although Jeffrey's really smart. Okay, so we're going to introduce some notation now that I haven't shown you yet. Yeah, thanks. It's always mentioned when there's stuff that wasn't done in field theory that I assume is. So if I look at the ratio of the W and Z masses, the W and Z masses are measured. You can look them up in the particle data book, what the masses are. That ratio, the vacuum expectation value, cancels out. It's just given by this. And you can see the Z and the photon, I'm sorry, are just an orthogonal transformation on the W, 3, and B. And so if you have a 2x2 orthogonal matrix, it's a rotation matrix. It's characterized by an angle, the angle of rotation. And that angle is called the Weinberg angle. And we usually define it in terms of its cosine and sine. So the cosine of the Weinberg angle is G2 over the square root of g1 squared plus g2 squared. And the sine of the Weinberg angle is g1 over the square root of g1 squared plus g2 squared. And so from this ratio, for example, this goes like cosquared of the Weinberg angle. And you could take that. So mw of mz is cosine of the Weinberg angle. Clear? The definition. And so you can deduce from the measured masses that sine squared theta w is 0.22 and v is about 246 GeV. Now, I have to say, when I was preparing my notes, I just remembered these. So I could have the last digit wrong, but you should go to the particle data book and use the data. I just look up the W and Z masses and figure out what these are. It's not exactly this, because what I've done is lowest order and perturbation theory. There's corrections, but not bad. Okay, so now I'm going to use all these results, and we're going to work on the covariant derivative to write it out in terms of W1, W2, W. Yes?
Which matrix do these angles appear?
Which matrix is the rotation matrix, you mean?
Yeah, what matrix you refer to?
Look up at the top. You see there's two equations, one for Z in terms of W and B, and one for A in terms of W and B. You can put Z and A as a two-column thing, and W3 and B as a two-column thing, and write that as a matrix equation, and that matrix is orthogonal. And so you could write it in terms of an angle, a rotation angle, and this is the rotation angle. Is that okay? Okay. So here we go. So we have to do a little algebra with generators. So remember, for SU2, there's generators T1, T2, T3. And I'm going to form these combinations, T plus or minus, which is T1, plus or minus I, T2. Now, for all the particles we've added to the theory, they're either doublets or singlets under the weak SU2 group. And so the generators here are either zero, when they're singlets, when they don't transform, or they're the polyspin matrices divided by 2. So when they're zero, it's pretty simple. So let's concentrate now on the polyspin matrix case. You with me? Okay, so for doublets, now I'm going to do it when it's the doublets. Other cases, it's zero. It's sigma 1 plus or minus sigma 2 over 2. And so T plus is equal to 0, 1, 0, 0, acting on the doublets and 0 otherwise for the singlets. And T minus is just 0, 0, 1, 0. And so we had in the covariant derivative G2 W1 T1 plus W2 T2. And of course, what happens is, for example, when I put in these poly matrices, I get in this upper component. So that's G2 over 2 for the half in terms of, when I put in the poly matrices, I get W1 minus IW2 here. So that's just the W plus, except I'm missing a root 2, and so I get W plus T plus plus W minus T minus. So there, I've taken this term, and I've written it in terms of the charged fields that we usually talk about, the W plus and W minus. Okay, so we're starting on our way. Let's continue. Look at it, I'm getting a lot better at this board stuff, aren't I? Oh, just when I said that. Leave me a little space. So I get, now I'm going to write out the covariant derivative. So it's d mu plus I g2, and there was a half and a root 2 upstairs, so we got a root 2 downstairs. I usually won't do this much detail on the class, but this is like the key thing. You know, it tells you how the Z and the W is coupled to the quarks and leptons. If you don't know that, life just isn't worth living. Oh, you always want to simplify notation so you get less confused. So let's just leave out the Lorentz subscript for this. We can put it back in later. Everything's a four vector here, the fields. So let's just make our life a little easier. Now, next, what I'm going to do, I don't want to express things in terms of the hypercharge. We're going to express our final answer in terms of T3 and Q. So I'm going to write I'm going to write y in that formula is q minus t3. Okay. Oh. So here we go. Then we get this thing. So now we have to express, W3 and B in terms of Z and A. So here's a little aside here. So we had Z and A are equal to cosine of the Weinberg angle minus sine of the, and I'm writing this in matrix notation. So it's a rotation matrix. To invert it, you just put in minus the angle. Cosine doesn't change sign, then the sign changes sign. So W3 and B is equal to cos theta W, sine theta W, minus sine theta W, cos theta W, Z and A. So now I'll use this formula to eliminate W3 and B here. Everybody with me? Okay. So I get so this is W3. So you should, it's cosine theta W Z plus sine theta W A. And then I get plus I G1, B is Q minus T3, minus sine theta W Z plus cos theta W A. And now I'm just going to collect the coefficients of Z and the coefficients of A. I'm going to reorganize the terms in that way. Okay, so what do I get? I get D. Oh, I don't know why I keep writing this. I should have just focused on the other terms. Kind of crazy, don't you think, class? Okay, so what did I do here? Okay, so I took out a factor of the square root of G1 squared plus G2 squared. And now I'm looking at the coefficient of Z from this term first. So if I take this factor out, this becomes a cosine of theta W, so I get cos squared of theta W T3. And this one becomes minus sine squared of theta W Q minus T3. And it's all of this multiplying Z. Everybody understand? I just wrote this G1 as sine theta W times the square root of G1 squared times G2 squared. And then for the A term, okay, so similarly for the A term, we get cos theta W sine theta W T3. And then plus sine theta W, cos theta W, Q minus T3 times A mu. Wow, that's a big formula. Can you see if I write here? I guess so, why not? You okay? Geez, looks ginormous, doesn't it? I'm just wandering aimlessly in the middle of the class. I'm looking for colored chalk. Cancellations. We want cancellations. We want to make that formula smaller. So I said this was the photon. Oh, look at, I got a lower T3, an upper T3, they're all the same. Photon should just couple proportional to Q. Otherwise, it isn't a photon. Look. Should I say that again? I only do that because they're recording it. Yeah, I'm having fun. Manual. Excuse me while I play with the boards for 20 minutes. Okay, so let's put it all together. D mu is equal to d mu plus I g2 over root 2 w mu plus t plus w mu minus t minus plus I the square root of g1 squared plus g2 squared t3 minus q sine squared theta w. You see the q, the t3, this, you get sine squared plus cos squared, which is 1. Z mu plus E Q A mu, where E is this product, which is just, if I write it back in terms of G1 and G2, so now we know what the electric charge is in terms of the couplings we introduced originally, G1 and G2. And A mu indeed does couple to, like a photon, it couples proportional to the charge. Yes?
What happened to the I in the A mu term?
There's an I here.
And how about
did I leave it out here? I got excited. Thanks. Thank you. Oh, forgot. I brought my money. I'll give you a quarter for that. Yeah, I like right formulas on the board, if possible. Good catch. Okay, so look at this formula. It's a masterpiece. We're cooking with gas. If I want to know how quarks and leptons couple to the Z, the W plus, the photon, it's all from this covariant derivative. We're ready to go. We're ready to compute stuff. The wonders of the universe are at our feet, ready to be discovered. Well, slight exaggeration. Well, one more thing to do, class, before the wonders of the universe are actually lying before us at our feet, ready to be discovered using this very powerful mega formula. What do we got to do? Well, this covariant derivative acts on quark and lepton fields when we set up our Lagrangian, but those quark and lepton fields are not mass eigenstate. So we now got to rotate to the mass eigenstate basis and see if anything sneaky or bad happens. Okay, so let's talk about doing that. Oh, shoot, let's do the whole thing. Forget this. Let's write it one more time. I'm so proud of this formula. I wish I would have been the first to write it down. then I'd be really famous, but alas. Let's put everything in. What am I missing from this? The strong interactions. I just focused on the weak interaction, so let's write it all out. G, the strong coupling, the 8 gluons. So these are, for color triplets, these are 3x3 traceless Hermitian matrices, the generators of SU3. And there's 8 of them, so this index B is summed over 1 to 8. And then it's what I had before. Okay, so this is the full covariant derivative now. So now we got to rotate to mass eigenstate basis. And that rotation, remember, that rotation occurs on these indices I that label the flavor, the type of quarks. We got a lot of indices. We got color indices. We got doublet indices. We got Lorentz indices. And we got these flavor indices. So you got to, if I write down a transform, hi.
So the term in front of the Z, does that mean that, the weak interaction depends on the electric charge? The term before that,
because
Q is in there.
Yes. Okay. So the strength, for example, with which an up quark couples to the Z boson is different than the strength for which a down quark couples to the Z boson for two reasons. One because of the different values of T3, and the other because of the different electromagnetic charge. Okay. Absolutely right. Okay, so let's look at one of the interaction terms. Let's take, for example, the right-handed quarks, U bar right, and there's a term from its from the usual covariant derivative term. I guess it's I d slash is an I. I might not have all the I factors right in these formulas. So what does this mean? Here I've suppressed the flavor indices, so really, it's U bar right I, too many. These generators here for color, they act on the color indices that I've suppressed. Okay, so now we're going to rotate to the mass eigenstate basis. So this is an aside here. I'm going to work down here. So I guess it's really an equal. So it's I, it's U right bar prime, U right dagger, I, G, A, mu, B, D, B, U right. Got a lot of U's. Have you noticed that? Maybe I should try to write an equation where every symbol is U. Yes?
So
there's a term like this for every quark and every lepton, for the doublet, for the, I just was doing an example.
In the Lagrangian?
Right. So I'm focusing on a particular term in the Lagrangian, and I'm going to work this one out in detail, and then I'm just going to say the others go similarly and explain how they go, because I just don't have the time to do every term. Yeah, so this is one particular term. Now, look at here. There's a lot of matrices, right? These are 3x3 unitary matrices. These are 3x3 Hermitian matrices, but they act in different spaces. This acts on flavor indices. This acts on color indices, so I can just move this through here. This doesn't act on flavor space. And then I get U dagger U, so I get 1. The identity, because they're unitary matrices. So what does that tell me? It's a sort of a, it tells me the language that's usually used are there are no flavor-changing couplings of the gluon in the Lagrangian. What do I mean by that? I mean, when we go to the mass eigenstate basis, if I draw the Feynman rule for a gluon, pretty good loopy line, don't you think? There'll be a rule where you have an up quark, and there'll be another rule where you have, if we did another where you have a charm quark and a charm quark, these are the mass eigenstates, and another rule, all with the same strength of coupling, All with the same strength, sort of the identical rule except for the type of particle here. But there'll be no vertex of this type. No vertex that changes the flavor of the type of quark. This is not there. The gluons do not do this. Is that clear? Similarly, the photon and the Z do not do this. And it's not just up quarks. A similar argument holds for the other quarks, the down quarks and the leptons. So far, we have yet to write down the interaction that causes, for example, a top quark to decay, right? I haven't talked about something that'll change the flavor of. Yes?
Well, I see that the two unitary matrices cancel, and you said that that has this interpretation, that there's no flavor changing due to this interaction, but I don't quite see why this cancellation of unitary matrices should have that significance. If there were flavor changing due to this interaction, what would that look like mathematically?
Well, so it would mean that when I went to the mass eigenstate basis, there'd be some non-diagonal matrix here in flavor space left over. So this is a column vector, U prime, and in it is up, charm, top. And here in flavor space, I got the matrix 1. So I just get up, bar, up, charm, charm, top, top. But if this hadn't been 1, if it had been some crazy non-diagonal matrix, I would get couplings that change the flavor. Is that clear for everybody? It's a hugely important point phenomenologically in the behavior of the standard model. There are flavor-changing effects, but they don't occur at tree level. This is just the vertices and the Lagrangian. You can later ask about one-loop corrections, etc. Sort of lost in my notes. Give me 1 second. Okay. Well, time to talk about where there are some flavor-changing effects. Let's think a little bit more about the couplings of W plus and W minus. So I'll call this part of the Lagrangian L weak. So it's IG2 over root 2. Let's just use the W mu plus coupling. And that's U bar left gamma mu. And it doesn't go to U left. It goes to D left because of the matrix T plus and T minus that occur in the W plus and W minus. And the W minus coupling is just in the Hermitian conjugate. OK, so now let's go to the mass eigenstate. IG2 over root 2, W mu plus. So now I got to make this U left prime. And then I still have the gamma mu. And now what do I get? I get U left dagger. And then for the down, I get U left VCKM. Down left prime plus Hermitian conjugate. These eat each other to make a 1. And so I get IG2 over root 2. There's a bar here, sorry. U left prime bar VCKM D left prime. So this is not the matrix 1. We got left over a 3x3 unitary matrix. Why did that happen? Well, it happened because this W coupling, unlike the photon or the Z, it's charged, so it couples an up quark to a down quark, and different unitary matrices are used to diagonalize the up quark and down quark mass matrices, and so you just get left with the unitary matrix there. This is how the heavier quarks decay to the lighter ones, through the weak interactions, through the charged W boson. If this didn't work this way, you could be made out of top quarks. This is how top quarks, you'd be a lot heavier. kind of cool, actually. But I'm not done, but okay, I'll take your question.
So is this weak interaction at brain jam comes from
the covariant derivative, the W plus T plus part, plus the Hermitian Gaudian, which is the W minus T minus part. And I guess there's another I. Sorry, I keep it because it's I D slash, so it's I squared.
So what about those T plus M?
What?
I mean,
what about the T3 and the?
It seems not very obvious for me. Some of the terms seem like missing, some of the terms.
Well, I'm focusing on the coupling of the W plus here. So I'm taking out of the Lagrangian, and I'm focusing on the terms with the quarks and just the ones that involve W plus. So I've just thrown all the others away. They give you couplings of the gluons, the Z, the photon. But we're going to look at the couplings one at a time and figure out what they do physically. So I'm not looking at the whole thing at once. Too hard for me.
You're also using the explicit value of T.
Yes, here I put in the explicit value of T plus. It was one in the off diagonal, so it took the up to the down. Thank you. Yeah. Similar story for the leptons. You'd get a charge, an electron, a neutrino in some matrix here, or you could get, but it doesn't matter. All the neutrinos, if they're all massless, I can just define the mass. Any linear combination of them are mass eigenstates, and so I would just define this linear combination of neutrinos to be the ones I'm looking at, and there'd be no flavor-changing coupling. Of course, that's not really true. If I have to correct this for neutrino masses, but we haven't done that in these lectures yet. Yes?
I think you're missing a gamma mu in the third one.
Oh, yeah, in the third one. Thank you. Oh, you're going to get to get. I'm going to have to give you a quarter. Shoot, and it's a long way to throw the quarter. Anyone who's not wearing glasses near you should shut their eyes. You caught that? Wow. Not a great toss. Sign this lady up for the Dodgers. We need you. Okay, everybody good so far? So pretty important results. It seems sort of simple, the algebra, but physically these are very important results. And of course, we've measured the couplings of the... We've measured a lot of properties of the quarks, and so we know the elements of this CKM matrix. We know a lot about them, and I encourage you to go on the web, type in the PDG, particle data group, and there'll be a section on the CKM matrix. It'll tell you what we know about it, the values of the elements in the matrix, et cetera. Can't do that all in these lectures. Otherwise, it's a little bit of a discussion, how we learn about it, what we know, but it's discussed in the particle data book. Okay, I still want to do the couplings of the Higgs at tree level. At tree level just means the terms from the Lagrangian. So how do I do that? Well, remember how the Higgs comes in. H. It's wherever you have a V, it's really, if you just set H to 0, you wrote down the Lagrangian and you put in the factors of V, then if you want the couplings of H, you just move that V to V plus H, expand it out, and you get all the couplings of H. So all the quark masses are proportional to V, and so you get Higgs couplings to all the quarks. Hold on a second, class. So the Higgs couplings to quarks and leptons are minus U prime, M up, the diagonal one. We've gone to the diagonal basis. I added the Hermitian conjugate, so the left and right went away. So, yeah. So all I've done to write it like this is I've taken V plus H, and I've wrote that as V 1 plus H over V. And so I put in these extra factors of H over V, since these are all proportional to V.
Okay.
Got it? Yeah? So big H was in those Yukawa couplings that we wrote down before. Like there was a big H. So big H was a place, you know, we wrote things like U bar R H. I forget whether it was H dagger or H in this case. But anyways, the H's were in these Yukawa couplings.
It was H transpose?
Oh, yeah, here it's with the epsilon. Okay, that's where H was. And then we put in the vacuum expectation value for H, V over root 2, and we got the mass terms. But if I would have put in the whole expression for H, V plus H over root 2, there's also the, that would pick up these additional terms. Okay?
Do we have another D in the middle?
Yes. You're getting too rich. No cash for that one, but I appreciate it. You've got my appreciation instead of cash. Yeah, that'll get you far. Thank you. Okay, so what else gets mass from the vacuum expectation value of the Higgs? Well, the W and Z boson, so the Higgs will couple to them. So let's work those out. So I have MW squared, W mu plus, W mu minus, and this goes like the VEV squared, it's proportional to that, so I just put in a 1 plus H over V squared, and then I got plus MZ squared over 2, Z mu, Z mu, and then I'll get 1 plus H over V squared. And so now we can read off the Higgs coupling to the W and Z. So we get L Higgs WZ, I don't know how to, doesn't matter. So it's like 2MW squared W mu plus W mu minus H over V plus MZ squared Z mu H over V plus MW squared W mu plus W mu minus H squared over V squared. And okay. Now we've got all the couplings. So what I want to do to close out the standard model at tree level, there's a few more things, but they'll be done for you in the tutorials. So there's couplings of just a single Higgs boson to the W and Z and coupling vertices with two Higgs bosons. That's what you get from that. And you get the strength of those couplings. It's pretty neat. Okay, I'm going forward, 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 leaving out some stuff that you'll get in the... So we want to calculate something involving weak decays, right? We always want to calculate something. You learn something, you want to calculate something you can compare with experiment. That's what physics is all about. You got all this formalism, but in the end, you compare with some experimental result. So what we're after comparing with now is the muon lifetime. It's a measured quantity, and we want to go ahead and use what we've done so far and compute the muon lifetime. I probably won't completely finish this today, but it'll be very close. So how does the muon decay in this theory? So basically we want to draw the simplest Feynman diagram, lowest order in perturbation theory, and then calculate the decay rate using the stuff we learned, right? Okay, so we have to draw a Feynman diagram, ka-ching, that'll let the muon decay. So It's got to involve the weak interactions because they're the only ones that change the type of object, the flavor of the object. And so we're going to have a muon going to the muon neutrino. And then we're going to have a W minus. The muon neutrino is just the one that couples to the mu minus. That's what we mean by it, of the three neutrinos. And then out from this vertex could come a lot of stuff. Could come an electron and its antineutrino, a muon and its antineutrino, and a tau lepton, the heaviest of the leptons, and its antineutrino. But of course, we only want the electron, because if it's the muon, it's not a decay. It can't decay to something heavier than it, so the only possibility is the electron. And so the process that gives the decay, the dominant decay, is mu minus goes to E minus nu mu nu E bar. And you know what I say about that? You know why I said that? We didn't do three-body phase space. We're jocks at two-body phase space. We got the formula, we just plug in. We don't have to think anymore. We work through it once. We haven't done three-body phase space. And three-body phase space is a pretty important thing to analyze. If you understand it well, there's a very powerful type of plot you can make. It's called a Dalitz plot that can tell you something about the physics involved in decays if you just have experimental data. And so we have to understand this phase space to understand Dalitz plots. Now, Dalitz plots, they're used by experimentalists all the time. You know, if you had a typical theory class on the standard model, they probably, nowadays, they might not talk about the Dalitz plot. I'm going to tell you about Dalitz plots. For one thing, the famous paper by Dalitz that introduced the Dalitz plot was introduced the year I was born. That's one special feature of the Dalitz plot, personally. The other thing was I actually had lunch with Dalitz at Oxford one time, and that was pretty cool. So I'm going to tell you about Dalitz plots, even though you all want to be theorists and not experimentalists. It's actually a pretty cool thing, a good thing to know. And anyways, we got to know about three-body phase space just to calculate this decay rate. So what do we want? We want the analog. So for two-body phase space, we had this formula for gamma. It was 1 over 8 pi. For if the particle decaying was A, its mass, the matrix, invariant matrix element squared summed over spins, yada, 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 P1 over MA. We want the analog of that, this thing we did before. We want the analog of that for three bodies. Okay, so let's do it. Yes? Oh, drop my chalk. Excuse me while I bend down. What can I do for you?
Try something 1 over 2 energy.
Pardon?
Try 1 over 2 something has a dimension with energy, and that will give you the equation.
I don't understand.
Did you compare the... maybe I'm wrong. Sorry.
Okay, well, you still got questions as we go on. I'm going to ask them. So we want the decay rate gamma. So it's 1 over 2 MA. Right, we got to write down this huge formula. Oh, shoot. So we get integral. So there's three bodies. So this is going to be A. We're going to do it generically. A goes to 1 plus 2. Plus 3. That's the decay. We call the particles 1. We'll call their momentum P1, their energy E1, and 2 and 3, etc. Integral D3 P1 over 2 pi cubed to E1. Integral D3 P2 over 2 pi cubed to E2. This is hard work class. I think I deserve extra pay. I don't get any pay. It's okay. Physics is fun. Teaching it is fun. Learning it is fun. And it's important too. Okay, so what are we going to do? We're going to use the same trick we used in two-body to get rid of the integral d3p1. We're going to write it as d4p1 delta p1 squared minus m1 squared. And then we're going to do the d4p1 integration with this delta function, exactly like we did in the two-body case. And so what do we get? So now we've got down to this line. Gamma is 1 over 2 ma, 1 over 2 pi to the fifth, integral d3p2 over 2e2, integral d3p3 over 2e3. We got the I forgot to put the matrix element in squared. So this is supposed to be spin averaged over spin, summed over final spins. I'm just not writing that out. The m squared, and what do we got? We got this delta function of pa minus p2 minus p3 squared minus m1 squared, this delta function. Okay. We're almost there. Let's write out the delta. Let's really write it out. Let's get a feeling for what's going on. So now I'm going to write out the whole delta function, doing all the dot products. So I get ma squared. We're working the rest frame of the decaying particle. So I get minus 2ma from pa dot p2, e2 plus e3. I'll get the individual mass squared. So I'll get m1 squared plus m2 squared minus m1 squared. And all I'm missing is the 2 p2 dot p3. So I got to write that down. Yowza, a lot of stuff. So that's 2e2, e3, minus 2, p2, p3, cosine theta. So you can see that all that matters as far as angles is the angle between, after I've integrated over p1, is the angle between p, yes?
Shouldn't the first m1 squared be m3 squared?
Yeah, thank you. Oh, geez. I'm running out of quarters here. This class is costing me. Line drive. Ooh, good catch. Thank you. Okay, so you'll notice that the only dependence is on theta. Well, that makes sense. But, you know, we've only got two vectors, p2 and p3. By Lorentz invariance, all it can depend on is the angle between them. By rotational invariant. So we're going to take our phase space that we're integrating over, and I'm going to mush it around a bit. So in this, I've got integrations over the direction of p2 and the direction of p3. So we'll integrate over the direction of p2. That gives a 4 pi. In the direction of p3, the solid angle is a phi and theta integration. Nothing depends on phi. That's a 2 pi. And then I'll have a d cos theta. And then I'll have the magnitude. So I'm going to call them, I'm going to call the magnitudes of the vectors just p2 and p3 to simply not to have to put absolute value everywhere. So I'll get, so these, remember, these aren't four vectors. Okay, I'll write it. Okay, so I'm going to work on this a little more. So out front is 8 divided by 4. That's a 2. And then I get, well, I cut the, and then there's a pi squared. And then there's a d cos theta. And I'm going to take, oops, they're squared, right, in the measure. I'm going to take p2 P2 dP2 and write it as E2 dE2 using a thing I derived before, and similarly for E3, and I get P2 P3 dE2 dE3. Next, we're going to do the cosine theta integral with this delta function. So here I've just written out the measure here. So I got to do three integrations. And the one I'm going to do with the delta function I have is the cosine theta. You with me, class? Oh, I still got 5 minutes. This is so perfect. That's enough time for me to raise the board. Ah, so high. So when I do the cos theta integration with the delta function, what goes downstairs? You know, it's not just a delta function cos theta equals something. There's a factor, right? There's 2p2, p3. So when I do the integral with the delta function, I get 1 over 2p2, p3. Don't you love it? Because that cancels out the p2, p3 from the integration measure. And so we get this lovely formula. Doubts probably was so pleased in 1953 when he derived this formula. So we integrated over cos theta. We got the spin averaged invariant matrix element squared. If I did all the factors right, you should check them. (32 × 2 = 64π³ma). So this differential distribution, so when the decays come out, let's say you got some 3-body decays, the energies of the particles, E2 and E3, they range over certain values, and you still conserve energy and momentum. But the number of particles, probabilistically, so if you had like you had a billion muons decay, so they'd come out with different energies, and the number of events at a given energy bin would be a direct measure of the invariant matrix element squared, with just this factor of proportionality. So you can measure this by making this Dalitz plot and learn about the physics. All the physics, from a theorist's perspective, is buried in here. The rest is kinematics, all the dynamics. And you can learn directly about that dynamics from taking all your events and plotting them as a plot E3, E2. You know, and they might lie like this. And the density of the events, if you take out this factor, directly measures m squared. Pretty neat, don't you think? So a lot of decays are what are called quasi-2-body. What does that mean? I'm going to explain what it means. You ready for quasi-2-body? Yeah, sounds like it's something about dating. But it's not. It's about decays. OK, so let's say we have a particle A decays to particle 1 plus particle B. But particle B is not stable. And it's got a fairly short lifetime, so you don't see it directly. All you see is decay products, which are 2 and 3. So in a two-body decay, the energy is fixed just by the masses of the particles. And these are two-body decays. And so E2 plus E3 will be EB. And this is a fixed number. Oh, in my notes I did this. Doesn't really matter. Doesn't matter, I don't know. And so E2 is equal to EB minus E3. So if the dynamics is quasi-2-body and you plot E2 and E3, you'll get like a line for your events. It'll have some width because of experimental issues, and this resonance might have a width, but it won't be flat. It'll just be a line like that, and that's how you identify if the dynamics corresponds to something quasi-2-body. And these plots, they're called Dalitz plots. Okay, so next class on Monday, I'm just going to use this phase space formula. It'll just take 10 minutes of the lecture, and we'll finish off and get the muon decay rate and compare with the experimental value, extract some parameters. And then we're going to go on to the standard model at the loop level, and that'll take us a week or so, maybe a little slightly more than a week, and then we'll finish off the last week of the class by some low-energy phenomenology. The high-energy phenomenology I'm going to discuss mostly in the standard model at the loop level, although some of it really is tree physics. Okay, so have a great weekend. I'm not around in the afternoon. You could still catch me a bit later this morning. And I'll see you next week.